information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Any method that involved experiencing a simulated mood or experience should be taken seriously. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 178 of Media Monarchy. It's July 16th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, Polanski set free, TV viewership down, police state updates, missing Iranian nuke scientists, drug war, bio wars, toxic takeover, objective eugenics, the new world next week, the news purge, Corbett report, ground zero, food world order, cyberspace war, all that, so much more. July 16th, 2010, episode 178 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Show like it round here. As a rule, who knows the wrong for
traffic was slow for the crash years. But there's no other show like it around here. This is the greatest show on earth. All around us, the shell game being played on the dirty street corners, but yet somehow folks keep falling for it. Brand new music from the new Pornographers. Again, the song Crash Years off their latest record, Together. The new Pornographers are in Portland tonight. Thought about seeing them. I don't know. They are, of course, featuring Nico Case, who I'd love to see. But I just don't think I have the energy. However, my friends, I do have the energy for the 178th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's a seat of your pants episode, pulling everything together, all the puzzle pieces coming into place, all in the last few moments as we go live here, as we do every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Huge thanks to my man Mike for helping me get my things together here on the Portland Radio Authority. Also, huge thanks to the folks at ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast worldwide, as well in Casper, Wyoming, on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM, and of course, the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, also simulcasting live worldwide. Free Radio Olympia.org. I do have a new interview that went up. I just haven't posted it up or linked it up yet. So much swirling around. BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net on 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California. OneSkyRadio.com on 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska. PhantomRadio.org. StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio and Radio23.org, where you can get the high quality downloads of all the episodes from Media Monarchy, suitable for rebroadcast. If you've got a pirate station, community station, internet station, anything, you don't have to ask. Just spread the information. And if you're going to do it, the high quality files are there for you. And you know, we're on all of them. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Blip.tv, Ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. Streaming and recording and archiving live video from the studio here for you. You can send me an email, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. We're on Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. And I want to make another mention for our folks at ZeroPointRadio.com that, again, bringing the Media Monarchy live right now. They also bring you other great shows from CorbettReport.com, GroundZeroMedia.org, and tons of other things. However, they really need your help, and I think we may lose Zero Point Radio. So if you find this information, if you find the alternative media useful and helpful in your life, in learning and growing and sharing information, open source intelligence, more, better, gooder information makes for better informed choices about your life and about the lives of those you love and who live around you. All of it. It's all connected. Please donate to ZeroPointRadio.com. There are buttons right there on the top left of the page. You can also donate to MediaMonarchy.com. $10 donation gets you the exclusive DVD from Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, where Richard Andrew Grove, as a Wall Street whistleblower, proves that money never sleeps. You know, we've got the Hollywood Oliver Stone version of Wall Street 2 coming up very soon. But we break down the real for you. And that's how we roll. And that's why you're here. As we glance at the breaking news on this July 16th morning in the year 2010, BP shares weaken, but new cap holds. We are going to get to both of those updates when we get to our latest BioWars EnviroHealth updates on the Gulf oil spill disaster. We also had a 3.6 magnitude earthquake hit Maryland this morning. A minor earthquake shakes U.S. Capitol's movers and shakers. Ah, and we see. I didn't know this, but here you go. Ex-Manchin aide tapped for Byrd's seat. Governor Joe Manchin of West Virginia is tapping former chief counsel Cart Goodwin, a member of a prominent West Virginia family, to succeed the late U.S. Senator Robert C. Byrd. That's coming from Forbes and Associated Press. Goodwin said to be chosen to fill Byrd's Senate seat. That's from Businessweek, USA Today. This is all looking to be 10 minutes ago, very, very recently. So I had it wrong. I told you a couple weeks ago it was going to be green, but apparently it's Goodwin. And again, as some of you may know, I've been in Portland, Oregon for about the last 5 years, but I come from West Virginia, where, among many other things, I was the music director at my community radio station. So that's the short version of how I got here and am doing this for you right now. So there you go. We also have Oregon banning plastic grocery bags and Bank of America profit falling. All that and so much more. So again, that's just what's on Google News right now on this July 16th morning. So, as I said, seat of your pants was running on fumes. Spent a few days in Seattle earlier this week, so of course didn't do a whole lot of blogging, but sometimes we all need a break from this. And it was nice, and I needed it. But now let's get to our first story. And our first story is a follow-up on something that we followed quite closely last September, October on MediaMonarchy.com. And now the update. Surprise, surprise. Roman Polanski set free after Swiss reject U.S. extradition request. Now, we have the clip and the text from the Associated Press, as well as the Los Angeles Times and ABC News and the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which I actually just saw the building for. It's in. And of course, what we have to tell you is the important, important flashback interview with Peter LaVenda, the author of the Sinister Forces trilogy. When this Polanski story broke last fall, it swirled around with the death of one of the Manson family murderers, Susan Atkins, and it also swirled around the exposure of some sort of family sex crimes with the Phillips, John Phillips, Michelle Phillips. Is that the daughter's name? It escapes me right now. It's just coming off the top of my head. And all those things swirled around that instantly, to me, thought Sinister Forces. So that interview with Roman Polanski is linked up as the flashbacks at the top. My most downloaded episode. I implore you to get that interview with Peter LaVenda on the Polanski polemic. Now, having said that, The Swiss government declared renowned film director Roman Polanski a free man this past Monday after rejecting a U.S. request to extradite him on charge of having sex in 1977 with a 13-year-old girl. The Swiss mostly blamed U.S. authorities for failing to provide confidential testimony about Polanski's sentencing procedure in 77-78. The stunning decision could end the United States' three-decade pursuit of Polanski unless he travels to another country that would be willing to apprehend him in ways sending him to Los Angeles. France, where he spent much of his time, does not extradite its own citizens, and the public scrutiny over Switzerland's deliberations may dissuade other nations from making such a spectacular arrest. The Swiss government said it sought confidential testimony given on January 26 by Roger Gunson, the Los Angeles attorney in charge of the original prosecution against Polanski. Washington rejected this request. Mr. Polanski can now move freely. Since 12:30 on this past Monday, he's a free man. Roman Polanski set free after Swiss reject U.S. extradition request.
Roman Polanski is a free man. So says the Swiss government, which has denied a U.S. request to extradite the director on a 1977 charge of having sex with a 13-year-old girl. Swiss blamed U.S. authorities for failing to provide confidential testimony about Polanski's sentencing. The Oscar-winning director may now move freely in Switzerland, where he's been under house arrest at his chalet since last December. It's not known if he'll return to France, where he holds citizenship, where he spent most of his time after fleeing the U.S. in 1978. The stunning decision could end American authorities' pursuit of Polanski unless he travels to another country that's willing to arrest him and extradite him to the U.S. France does not extradite its own citizens. John Belmont, the Associated Press.
So there you have it. So that was obviously both the Associated Press article and clip, because they sounded pretty damn similar. But again, I implore you to check out that interview, because I'll just remind you quickly that the sinister forces swirling around Polanski and the Manson family and all of those things, just to whet your appetite for the kind of information and connections that you may not be aware of that are in this interview with Peter Lavenda, that on the night of June 5th, the director of the Manchurian Candidate, John Frankenheimer, had a dinner party at his house, and among some of the guests were Roman Polanski and his wife Sharon Tate. The guest of honor that night was Robert F. Kennedy, and he would be driven to the Ambassador Hotel that night, where he would be killed by what, by most accounts and most of the research shows, was some type of hypnotized, mind-controlled assassin, Sirhan Sirhan. And Bobby Kennedy was driven to the Ambassador Hotel, where he would be shot by a Manchurian candidate from the director of the Manchurian Candidate. So tie in the Manson family, the music, the media. Sinister forces. I can't say, and I don't say, that the Illuminati run and control every single thing in the world, pulling every string, making everything happen, every single thing happen. But all of the research and our open source intelligence and data mining and media memeing shows that there are long-running families and organizations and societies that have schemed to make things happen. They tell you, you know, live for today, but they're thinking about the long term. They're the ones putting away seeds in Norway. And I don't know if that's going to be for us. I don't think so. Now, let's segue quite nicely into some of our other media and memes and updates. And we'll start with a quick one from the Washington Times that's, I suppose, kind of hopeful, but probably ultimately not too many factors playing into it. Broadcast TV viewership hits record low. This from the Washington Times. Americans avoided television in historic levels over the past week. That now being the previous week. This being posted up last Saturday, July 10th on MediaMonarchy.com. CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox together had the smallest number of primetime viewers last week in two decades of record keeping. So says Nielsen. Given the dominance of the big broadcasters before then, you'd probably have to go back to the early days of television to find such a collective shrug. The first week of July tends to be among the slowest weeks of the year in television anyway, with families more engaged in barbecues and fireworks. The problem was magnified this year because July 4th came on a Sunday, largely knocking out one of the week's typical biggest viewing nights. Boo-hoo. And again, I think we've said it a lot here, that we may not be able to end the war in Afghan, Iraq, but there are some things, some pretty simple, some a little less simple, but that we can actually do, and that's taking our money out of the big banks and not supporting organizations that lie to us and have been proven to do so time and time again. I'm spinning too many plates here, and then my mind wanders. But we can take our money out of the banks. We can not give our money to these advertisers and to the major corporate media outlets. If you're a Media Monarchy fan or a Simpsons fan, you know I'm always busting out quotes from the show that may or may not be obvious. But do you remember the Halloween episode where the advertising monstrosities came to life? Where they mentioned something about the Van Allen belt. But the way they defeat it is they just write a jingle, which is ironic in and of itself, but getting a jingle from Paul Anka to remind everybody, just don't look. Just don't look. So, again, mentioning the media meme updates, Henry Mako has a new article on something we've touched on from time to time that, again, has been fairly well documented. This is actually written by L.C. Vincent, but it's on henrymako.com, Henry, M-A-K-O-W. Network news, seeing through Illuminati eyes. Of course, with the CBS logo up at the top, you may think it's a basketball, football, and baseball. But of course, it's a big all-seeing eye staring at you. After World War II, with the emergence of three rival television networks, each with their own news departments, most Americans would have argued that the new age of television would grant them a multiplicity of sources and viewpoints. Yet from their very inception, all three TV networks have been guided by men who are a product of and beholden to America's intelligence agencies. From the beginning, the men who ran ABC, CBS, and NBC, as well as those sitting on their board of directors, had the deepest ties to the Central Intelligence Agency, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Rothschild Banks, and the Rockefeller Foundation. From the very beginning, the U.S. news media has been designed to promote the New World Order agenda. Guided by the light of the Illuminati, the illuminated ones. This is why network newscasts are virtually identical. Three networks, you could of course argue many more than that, but one master, late controversial investigative reporter Eustace Mullins, noted that CBS chairman William S. Paley was both conduit and operative for the CIA. Many directors of CBS had CIA ties. NBC and ABC TV networks were also riddled with CIA and Rothschild Banks-linked directors. Yet even without these overlapping network directorships, the CIA made a concerted effort to not simply shade and tilt news stories, but to actively recruit journalists to quash stories or to distort and selectively bias the presentation of stories. This article goes on as we make a mockery of the news. And the code name for this whole work that we're discussing here was called Operation Mockingbird. You can go read about it on Wikipedia. A mockingbird, of course, is a creature with a natural gift to mimic or mirror whatever song another bird makes, or your car alarm. So, too, the CIA's embedded reporters, editors, and owners would mirror whatever particular slant the agency wished the general public to perceive. According to author Steve Kangas in his article, Anatomy of the Overclass, the CIA recruited 25 media organizations and over 400 reporters and journalists to do their bidding since the late 40s. Of course, the Central Intelligence Agency being established by the National Security Act of 1947. They gave us the CIA and the NSA, and much of what Eisenhower said as he was going out, even almost two decades later, we should have guarded against the acquisition of influence from the military-industrial complex. And of course, as we're going to, I believe, mention here as we run down a quick list, one of the other heads, connected guys in Time Magazine, Loose, Skull and Bones, CIA, Wall Street, the old boys, if you will. All of this, again, referencing the 25 media organizations, 400 reporters and journalists, this all came out to the Church Committee in 1975, and many felt that the agency's reach went even deeper. So the quick list of some of the folks we'll mention, the aforementioned William Paley, president of CBS Network, Philip and Catherine Graham of the Washington Post, Bilderberg attendees, Henry Luce, publisher, Time and Life, Arthur Hayes Sulzberger of the New York Times, Jerry O'Leary of the Washington Star, which I'm not even sure that exists anymore. A big one that should be researched for you, C.D. Jackson and Fortune. Walter Pincus, reporter for the Washington Post, who still writes to this day all of their intelligence reports. So this article does have the sources at the bottom. Who owns the network TVs? Eustace Mullins article. More on Operation Mockingbird, controlled media research. The Taking of America by Richard E. Sprague. And we'll note, again, as someone does at the bottom of this article, about Project Censored doing good work to bring out the stories that don't get covered or even actively get covered up on the corporate-controlled media. And again, that's what this is all about. That's why we're using the free and open web such as we have it right now. And we'll use whatever bells and whistles and social networking gadgets to spread this kind of information. Because again, forewarned is forearmed. But I don't want to digress into all that about what may or may not be coming down, what may or may not be inevitable, what may or may not be prophecy, God's will, meant to be, predictive programming. I think I've mentioned that hopefully, fortunately, a place like Portland, Oregon can hopefully be well suited to weather the worsening storms as far as the ability to connect community and food and all of those things. But let's get through the rest of the Media Memes updates that, again, are posted up alongside the broadcast TV viewership hits record low article. We've mentioned time and time again, and we've played the clip probably at least once or twice for you here in the last almost 4 years of Media Monarchy live on the air. On the air. There was a game called, a video game called Shattered Union, which basically seemed to lay out a possible scenario for these disunited states, shattered union, predictive programming on a number of levels. But now we have another entry into desensitization gaming, and wouldn't you know it, it's called Homefront.
The torpedo that sunk the Chunun and took the lives of 46 South Korean sailors was fired by a North Korean submarine.
North Korea's weapons program continues to intensify.
It surpassed 1,000.
It appeared at the UN to call for severe sanctions against North Korea.
This morning comes the news of Kim Jong-il's death.
North Koreans greet their new supreme leader, Kim Jong-il's son, Kim Jong-un.
Today, our beloved leader, Kim Jong-un, has united North and South Korea, forming the Greater Korean Republic. Although costs at the pump are ready to break the dreaded $20 ceiling.
No, we got communists! This is that communist!
Across the nation, civil unrest has intensified with the demise of the U.S. government.
This is not a retreat, nor are we abandoning our Asian allies.
Under threat of annihilation by the Greater Korean Republic, Japan has surrendered.
After the president ordered a freeze on bank withdrawals.
We don't know where we will get our next meal from.
Korea's annexation continues to spread despite the U.S. Today, the Greater Korean Republic launched their latest communication satellite, claiming it will bring a message of peace to the entire world.
Homefront. There you have it, my friends, the latest entry in predictive programming, desensitization gaming. Of course, we seemingly have a whole generation of guys who have been raised to instinctively shoot things at the push of a button, now helping lead the Western finance oligarchs and their enforcement arm of the military. Killing guys at the push of a button from thousands of miles away. Hey, it's like a video game. The rest of our media meme updates. Rest in peace, Harvey Pekar, American Splendor comic artist, dead, I believe at the age of 70. Again, referencing CBS News from Forbes, new layoffs coming to CBS News, question mark. Again, I don't wish for anybody to lose their job. And something we're going to get to later, Corbett Report interviewed Max Kaiser talking about the power of boycotts, targeted boycotts. But our last media meme note, I suppose we should hit it and reference it, because it's out there, and that's what we do here. And we're going to get it from an article from Jurian Mason over on InfoWars, where they get into the crusade against Mel Gibson, seems stamped, sealed, and delivered by the NWO. That basically, you know, it's another setup where he's going to be crucified. The interesting part of this, and how they're kind of defending him, and of course mentioning Hoover and blackmail and Huffington and all of that. There's a Playboy interview in July 95 where Mel Gibson identified the power behind the throne with stunning accuracy. 95, of course, Bubba Clinton still in power. You know. With the conversation turning towards then-President of the U.S., Bill Clinton, Gibson suggested that he was obviously groomed for the job early on in his career. "Do you really believe that?" asked the surprised interviewer, which he shouldn't be, to which Gibson replied, quote, "I really believe that. He was a Rhodes Scholar, right?" Do you know what a Rhodes Scholar is? Cecil Rhodes established the Rhodes Scholarship for those young men and women who want to strive for a new world order. Have you heard that before? George Bush, CIA? Really, it's Marxism, but it doesn't just call itself that. Carl had the right idea, but he was too forward about saying what it was. Get power, but don't admit to it. Do it by stealth. There's a whole trend of Rhodes Scholars who will be politicians around the world, end quote. Flabbergasted by his words, the interviewer retreaded to the mantra of the numb and ignorant when confronted with a sudden burst of truth. This certainly sounds like a paranoid sense of world history. You must be quite an assassination buff, to which Gibson replied, quote, oh, fuck. A lot of these guys pulled a boner. There's something to do with the Federal Reserve that Lincoln did, Kennedy did, and Reagan tried. I can't remember what it was. My dad told me about it. Everyone who did this particular thing that would have fixed the economy got undone. Anyway, I'll end up dead if I keep talking shit. End quote. Not dead, thank God, although the New World Order is pulling out all the stops to make sure his career will be. Now, generally here, we'll only reference the tabloid news as it relates to the broader shell game, as it were. But I think this is one of those cases where it is important to make reference to all of this. Now, again, I told you I was in Seattle for a couple days, was in a hotel, had the fantastic opportunity to watch television. And it's always nice, maybe, you know, once, twice a year to be somewhere where I can watch TV, and it's kind of entertaining, but it doesn't take long before you go, oh, that's right, I don't miss this trash at all. And there were interesting memes and synchronicities, catching things on national television that happened to do with Seattle, featuring a place that I had just walked past earlier that day, and it wasn't just local broadcasting. And then Portland people on ridiculous America's Talent Show, and just all that bread and circus. Yes, I bared witness to it. And of course, Mel Gibson was on the tip of everybody's tongue, and it was on David Letterman and blah, blah, blah. This kind of veers off topic, but it still, I think, has to deal with what's being built, this new financial world order, and hoping that places where we are will be able to weather these worsening storms, as I said. And that's going to be more community-based food, like I said, but also media and art and all of those things. And I'd like to think, and we've hit some of these articles before, whether it was Tom York of Radiohead talking about the end of the major labels, whether it was Jarvis Cocker of Pulp last week talking about go with the independent over the majors. And then on the flip side, you see the massive, massive PSYOP memes with Gaga and Justin Bieber, who was just in Portland Wednesday night, and all of that. But there are artists who, for whatever reason, have found themselves in a situation where they're trying to switch up or have to switch up what they've been doing in the massive media industrial complex. So whether that's Radiohead giving away their album, or Nine Inch Nails giving albums away, Saul Williams giving albums away, doing a pay what you can, doing even Kickstarter fundraisers for albums, which I've been reading about a little bit, Public Enemy's doing it, Jill Soulbule's doing it. And as I saw a very aging and unfunny David Letterman, it reminded me that Conan O'Brien is now in a situation where he could do anything he wanted. Mel Gibson is now in a situation where he can do anything he wants. He's got the money and the fame and the capital. And that's the thing. When you cut out the media middlemen, you'll find that when you put your art out there at a more reasonable rate, because all the middle men and women aren't getting their cut, I'm like, damn, that cuts my overhead. That's more profit straight to the artist. Now, granted, these are all huge cases, and there are only very few Radioheads and Conan O'Briens of the world. But I guess in kind of a wishful thinking, I'd like to think that they could completely shun and kind of usher in this new community-based connection of arts and media and communication and information. But perhaps that's me just being idealistic again. Should be careful with that. So let's now shift gears and get to the latest police state updates. Suffer these crimes as the backlash grows. And we start off with an article from Paul Joseph Watson, where we unfortunately note, and it sounds like hyperbole, and yes, there are many in the alternative media who do overdo things, or sometimes underdo things. Again, this is all, you know, small one-man band kind of operations. I'm not perfect. Don't take a damn thing I say for gospel. You have to do all the research yourself. But I always have to say that Alex Jones and that whole InfoWars team, they do amazing work. They're the ones who got me to dig deeper after 9/11. And they are at the forefront of provocative alternative media. Where we note that it seems to look like there can be little doubt that America, along with the West as a whole, is being set up for a total collapse in which life as we know it will be fundamentally altered and rebuilt around a collectivist model managed and controlled by the same criminals who engineered the crisis in the first place. America has been targeted for an economic, military, and social coup d'etat by globalists who know that to get people to accept a new way of life under the heel of the New World Order requires that the pillars of everything that they knew before are completely pulverized in a controlled demolition, if you will. Freedom, prosperity, and community have no place in a post-industrial revolution, and every assault on the living standards of American citizens is designed to infect and wither these ideals. Are we looking at a road warrior? Speaking of Mel Gibson, see, and those are our media memes. That's why we do this. That's why we track all this information. We'll see amazing things being connected. Are we looking at a road warrior-style collapse of society in 2 years, if the entities that orchestrate all these crises are allowed to pose as saviors and institute their austerity fascism? And we've gone over recently that new word, austerity, that seemingly out of nowhere has now been injected into the public discourse. And that means you tighten your belt. But that means they're the criminals who caused the problems in the first place to get you to react, to get the proper reaction out of you so they can shove their solution that they already wanted to do down your throat. Austerity, fascism, carbon taxes, green economy, post-industrial revolution, and the evisceration of America's first world status that will inevitably follow if such measures are allowed to pass. The plan for America is to sink the country into chaos so that it can be swallowed whole and consumed as part of the march toward a global government, or global governance, as they like to say. The globalists want to do to America what they've done to the third world by creating an underclass of impoverished and deprived citizens who are dependent on government for their every need. Sounds like Soylent Green. And now we have millions of Americans dumbed down to the point where, as major newspapers announce that the country's heading into a third Great Depression, as unemployment soars, as police departments announce they'll no longer be responding to crimes, and as infrastructure crumbles, the top story yesterday afternoon on Yahoo.com, the most heavily trafficked website in the country, was about how Brad Pitt had shaved off his beard. Likewise, as society and the economy collapses around them, Americans are more concerned about protesting the decision of a basketball player to move to another team. However, fortunately, we have a growing number of grassroots movements bringing people together under the banner of resentment and, I would say, resistance against big government. This has led to political victories for anti-incumbent candidates who now seriously threaten to dilute two-party power monopoly in Washington this November. This has led individuals close to Obama to openly invoke the need for a domestic terror attack as the only way to rescue his presidency in the wider collectivist agenda. Globalists are in a race against time to completely destroy everything America stood for so that they can rebuild the country in their own likeness. This is why central banks are now abandoning the U.S. dollar as part of the move towards a global union currency backed by a global central bank that will become the world's reserve currency for the new world order. The article goes on, but I think you get the idea. And many of the specific things we just referenced in there, we are going to hit on this episode 178 of MediaMonarchy.com. So let's continue down the police state updates. Suffer these crimes as backlash grows. We've got National Guard Homeland Response Force coming to Missouri. And if we go north, security plan for Canada-U.S. border announced. Yes, my friends, still building the North American community, as the Council on Foreign Relations likes to call it, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the Transnational Highway, all of those things are quite real if you take the time to research it. More on this Canada-U.S. border, on globalatlanta.com. We also have cops showing Marines how to take on the Taliban. And again, that's the thing. While we now have the beginning of the new financial world order, the terror war still goes on. They don't call it the war of terror anymore. But they just changed the names and changed some of the things, and it's still the same. The same agenda goes forward. Obama is continuing it all, as the right-wing reactionaries didn't say a thing during the criminal Bush years. Now they look around and go, damn, look at all this bad stuff. And as hopefully mainline Democrats who still drive around and wear their Obama stickers and shirts and the corporate logos, corporate political faux rock star, hopefully they're having their oh shit moment that they've been hosed and lied to yet again. Cops show Marines how to take on the Taliban. That's from NBCLosAngeles.com. The integration of the military and the police, the integration of the war of terror into just fighting crime. Smearing it all together in what would historically have been wildly illegal and objectionable. Now just doing it. It does remind me when I was sitting in the Seattle train station, the Amtrak, on a loop with the captions running. You couldn't hear it. It was basically a loop about security measures. And when I first noticed it, of course, what first caught my eye was we're talking about what does RFID do? RFID being, of course, radio frequency identification, talking about the borders, talking about trusted travelers, talking about all that is coming soon for us here in the North American community. Large emergency response exercise occurred at the Kissimmee Building in Florida. More on that from OrlandoSentinel.com. Again, as we have always tracked the terror drills and the war games, we know that they're used for a number of levels. It's used, of course, just to keep inflating the private military contractors and the military-industrial complex. But it's also used to train those drones and troops and button pushers and pencil pushers and policy wonks and all those connected to this whole growth industry of the global war of terror. Gets them used to the idea of ramming unconstitutional things, things even against just natural law, down a populace throat. and it gets the people used to seeing the military roll down their streets. Now, we have a massive international war game going on, and it's called Red Flag, which should, of course, raise a lot of red flags. Airmen and allies train for combat at Red Flag, Alaska.
It's the only Alaskan Red Flag exercise that brings in airmen from all over the world.
More than 1,000 airmen are gathering at Elmendorf and Isleson Air Force Bases this week for an international exercise.
Channel 2's Christine Kim has the story. Christine.
Steve, Maria, the training unites forces from around the world. Airmen from four different countries joined U.S. forces for Red Flag, Alaska.
Welcome to Red Flag, Alaska.
It's one military exercise that brings airmen from all around the world into one room.
We come here to put all our experience and training together and go out and simulate a combat environment.
You can find airmen from Japan, Romania, and Belgium.
We have very little training opportunities in Belgium, so this is one of the chances we have to take to get this done.
The Republic of Korea, a country already familiar working with U.S. troops, but here to strengthen their ties during these tense times.
We have the American Air Force in Korea, and coalition and the combined working environment is very important. And being able to perform under a combined environment is therefore essential as well.
The Red Flag Alaska missions began nearly 2 weeks ago with at least two flights a day.
There's a lot of air-to-ground threats that we simulate out there, some surface-air missiles and stuff we have some that's out there in the range. We have some air-to-air threats that we have that the guys from up north at Allison Air Force Base, that they fly as the enemy, as the red air.
This particular mission is an airdrop with eight C-130s. U.S. Air Force C-130 Hercules will lead the way. The aircraft flies over a diverse terrain as low as 300 feet above the ground. In the back, two airmen are getting ready for an airdrop. Officials say there could be anywhere from 20 to 55 troops jumping off the back, in addition to supplies. You can see the second aircraft trailing behind, dropping flares to simulate troops. It's just one piece of the mission. What you can't see are the other players above and below, making it safe to drop.
Whether it be the fighters who are providing the top cover for us against enemy air threats, the surface-to-air attack aircraft that are taking out targets that are trying to hit us from the ground.
The military says because of the large airspace, it makes a war scenario more realistic and adds this flight is as real as it can get.
But know that after coming out and executing this, that we're ready to handle anything that's thrown at us.
It's another effort to prepare our troops and allies and to rise above today's military challenges.
Now, there are a total of four Red Flag Alaska exercises each year. Besides its current exercise, there are three others that are pretty similar but do not include international forces.
Oh, well, you got to have those international troops kind of integrating, erasing any kind of national sovereignty ideas or any of that outdated garbage. So that report was from KTUU. We also have more from Free Press International. U.S. Multinational Air Force Exercise Red Flag started yesterday, July 15th. Connecting along with that, and again, you will see these patterns, and that's what we do. You'll see the patterns emerge. Did you ever see the film Pi? We've got an article from beforeitsnews.com, and now what they have in screaming all capital letters, false flag alert imminent, is again the kind of thing that we have to be very careful about. Always predicting the sky is falling, always trying to say it's going down, this is going to happen, martial law tomorrow. And ultimately, I find the more we can put these things on the record ahead of time, sure, may sometimes hurt the credibility, but in a way it could also act as a pushback, hopefully showing that on a number of levels the populace is becoming aware of all of these old tricks that, again, these multi-generational serial killers have been using time and time and time and time and time again. This article gets into some unusual put options. An unusual amount of put options. Put options are a bet that the stock is going to fall. Now, leading up to 9/11, we of course had massive put options put on American and United and other firms that would be directly involved in the events of 9/11. So just as 3 days before 9/11, there was unusual amounts of trading going on with American Airlines, we're seeing the same type of action, this time with power companies. This, of course, as Obama-connected supporters say, an act of terrorism is the only thing that will save him. As, again, we've already had reference to, that we will get to. Interesting options volume for CenterPoint Energy. Unusual trading activity for Iron Mountain Incorporated. And some of these source back to Market IntelliSearch. And again, we're just putting it on the record. Connecting dots. On down the police state update list, this from NationalPost.com. Conspiracy theorists say G20 riots were an inside job. And of course, they're referring to the police cars and areas that were more or less left open and set up and staged to be attacked and burned. Much like some of the bankster protests we've seen, where it was an engineered, staged, managed media event. All windows being boarded up where the protest was taking place except one certain building that was sort of preset to be unprotected. And that, again, connects us to 9/11. That, again, takes us all the way back to JFK, where Fletcher Prouty said, all you have to do to make an event like this happen, that would ultimately be a false flag to be blamed on your political enemies to get your agenda through, is you just have to remove the regular security protections that would 99% of the time take care of things, as we see routinely day to day. But when you take away JFK security, when you call down Henry Ripka off of the car, supposed to be on the runner, as Secret Service should be, standard operating procedure. You can see that video of him being told to stand down. When you don't shut the windows, when you slow down the motorcade, when you change the route at the last minute, you're opening it up. When you call off the bomb dogs, when you do the power downs, when you change security, you're opening yourself up. Pentagon, Trade Center towers, hell, Katrina, Gulf oil spill, Oklahoma City, whatever you want. Oh, and here we go, boogie boogie, terrorists recruiting new members in U.S. prisons. That's from ReporterNews.com. And I believe that probably originally came from NationalTerrorAlert.com, which, you know, in the last several months we thoroughly enjoy because they bring you all the amazing global war of terror threataganda. Biometric entry plan for California skate park. This coming from europeskate.com. Unfortunately, they're none too happy about it. And now we have the reference to cops not coming anymore. We just can't afford it. NBCBayArea.com. Suffer these crimes in Oakland? Don't call the cops. We don't have time to hit the list, but it's pretty much anything you would routinely call the police for. They don't have the time or the money or the care to be able to deal with it. As we referenced before, this precipice of collapse, all the protections are being taken away. And again, if we can wage this global war of terror where we can deliver missiles with precision and shock and awe, but somehow we can't feed and clothe and have jobs for people, it's all a part of the plan. It's all connected. And as we've said time and time again, as the poo-poo starts to fly at the oscillator, the most of the mainline regular good cops trying to do a good job are probably going to abandon anyway because they're going to go take care of their families. And that's when it's going to get really ugly. We do have an op-ed from thestar.com, a rough lesson in civics, again referencing the recent G20 protests where pretty much most of the pillars of democratic participation were all completely violated and stomped on. Threat level has court mixed on the constitutionality of taking DNA from arrestees. the Department of Homeland Security with the Transportation Security Administration have teamed up to give you job advertisements on pizza boxes. That coming from federalnewsradio.com, I believe that happening in the District of Criminals or Washington, D.C. Like my man Jeff from rockcreekfreepress.com likes to note. And then we'll end the police state updates with a couple of positive notes. From USA Today, backlash grows versus full body scanners. And I did see that the other day. I guess I was still in Seattle and saw a USA Today box and saw that on the front of the page above the fold. As we've noted, Dubai decided they're not going to do the naked body scanners, saying it violates tenets of Islam, let alone just, you know, basic civility and personal freedom and privacy and human rights. But that's the catch. They get us all rabble-rabbled about RFID chips or the naked body scanners, but maybe that's not really what they want to go for anyway. It's all going to be about biometrics and facial recognition. So, the backlash grows, and again, it destroys your DNA. It doesn't actually stop anything. We're already seeing the poorly trained TSA thugs abuse the materials. It does save your naked bodies as a photo. And just like they lie about all these things. Oh, again, just like that video about border security at the Amtrak station. It's like, oh, the RFID doesn't track you. It just tracks the number that represents you. But our last positive note here on Police State Update, suffer these crimes as backlash grows. Coming from azfamily.com, as we noted, I believe, last week, if not the week before, the Arizona freeway speed cameras are going to be turned off this week.
Photo radar cameras on Arizona's state highways will be turned off this week. So, do you still have to pay those tickets? That's what a lot of folks are probably asking. 3TV's Marissa Wingate, live along State Route 51 with the answer. Marissa?
Yeah, Bev, unfortunately for people who have their pictures snapped before Thursday at midnight, the answer is yes, they will have to take care of it, at least if they get served, and DPS says they will still be out there serving people.
Come Friday, they're coming down. DPS photo radar cameras, San Francisco Corso. With the law offices of Corso and Rude, that means one thing.
That's why we're getting flooded with so many people wondering, now what?
Now what happens if you have an outstanding ticket or you get snapped before the July 16th deadline?
Everybody's nervous, worried, scared. Some people are going away and they don't know how to deal with their ticket or what to think.
But most all seem to be thinking the same thing.
I wouldn't do anything. Nothing.
Why?
Because it's going to end, right?
So you think it'll just go away?
Yeah, it'll just go away.
Yeah, it'll just get pushed right under the table.
But DPS says not so. They'll still be serving the tickets even after the cameras are gone, because that's money they plan to collect. The problem is, prior to the deadline, a Redflex representative had to be at your hearing to prove the case to the judge.
That's who you would be confronting. Now, they've issued no statement as to what happens after July 16th. Who's actually going to be sitting in that seat?
DPS tells us a Redflex representative will still be there, because even though their contract has expired, Redflex will get a percentage of money collected. So what this means for drivers who get snapped before Friday?
If you have a ticket and you're served with that ticket, you know, you're going to have to deal with it.
Now, just because the cameras along the highway are coming down, DPS says you still can't speed because they will have more officers out here in the camera's place. Live in Phoenix, Marissa Wingate, 3TV.
Yeah, I wouldn't do anything. What are you going to still, you know, sit in jail on some rap that they then turned into not a crime anymore? No, of course not. Ignore it. At least some kind of pushback against the surveillance grid, as we do note that a lot of times when there is some kind of pushback from the state, it's usually not out of any kind of moral standpoint or, you know, personal freedoms and liberties, whether that's a plant that grows that some people find helpful for their illnesses, you know, that you can also use to make, you know, paper and textiles and food and power a car, but, you know, it's totally illegal because we have to give those great contracts to all the petroleum, terror juice, multinational corporations who salute no flag or no nation, but they tell you to stay in your little tribal zone as they get us all to fight amongst each other. And, you know, they cause problems, and then somehow they have a solution for it that they thought of before the problem seemed to come. But we're digressing. We're now into, well into, hour number two of episode 178 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 16th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, cover-ups, and so much more. We do these weekly two-hour live shows, live as we are right now on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, streaming live video on ustream.tv/MediaMonarchy, simulcast live on zeropointradio.com, who again will remind you, need your donations to survive. Simple as that. If you gain positive information, enrichment, call it what you will, if it's valuable to you, please donate. And even if you haven't checked it out, donate. Spread it. That's how, again, we can kind of take control, community-based. But not with the collectivist overlay, as we were referring to earlier. We're, of course, also on the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. And we still have so much to go over in this second hour. The news purge, the bio wars, the drug war, food world order, cyberspace war. But now, one of the bigger, stranger stories of the past week, and I won't claim for a second that I've wrapped my head around this one or figured out who's who and who's what and who's lying and who's an agent and who is kidnapped. But of course, like most of the things we cover, they have the ugly intelligence agency fingerprints. Missing Iranian nuclear scientist turns up at Pakistan embassy in the United States. This from The Guardian, with many numerous contextual, subtextual links for you to flesh out this story for yourself. We also cover it this week on the latest episode of The New World Next Week, the weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. That video is up right now and live. You can hit it and download the high-quality version on NewWorldNextWeek.com. Again, still working it out with our new Blip.TV service. But again, an Iranian nuclear scientist who was missing for over a year amid claims that he had been abducted by the CIA surfaced Tuesday, July 13th, at the Pakistan embassy in Washington, apparently asking to be returned home. Iran accused Saudi Arabia of handing over Shahram Amiri, A-M-I-R-I, to the U.S. after he disappeared during a pilgrimage over a year ago. A man purporting to be Amiri subsequently appeared in a series of internet videos, some saying he was hiding from U.S. agents. Today, Amiri was quoted by Iranian official media as claiming that the U.S. government had intended to return him to Iran to cover up his kidnapping in Saudi Arabia. Following the release of my interview in the internet, which brought disgrace to the U.S. government for this abduction, they wanted to send me back quietly to Iran by another country's airline. Amiri told state radio from the Iranian Interests Office in Washington, D.C. Doing so, they wanted to deny the main story and cover up this abduction. However, they finally failed. Like I said, we have a lot of tie-ins from Danger Room, Associated Press, Reuters, on and on around the world. And we do have some updates that, of course, shouldn't be very surprising. But let's grab the report to get us all up to speed on this bizarre story of triple agents and spooks and patsies and geopolitics and intelligence networks and rogue elements and, yes, sinister forces. Let's get a report from Russia Today on this missing Iranian nuclear scientist, which is a question, who was kidnapped, which is a question, who is now turned up at the Pakistan embassy in the U.S., which is a question, who has now been shipped out and has returned home.
Iran says one of its scientists who surfaced in the U.S. after being missing for a year is heading home. Tehran claims he was abducted by the CIA, but Washington's adamant that Shahram Amiri turned up in America of his own free will. RT's Christine Fazal has the details.
The main question in this case, how did Iranian scientist Shahram Amiri get to the United States? One person has already answered that question, Shahram Amiri himself. But his answers completely contradict one another. In this video, a man who says he's Shahram Amiri says he's in Tucson, Arizona, and was kidnapped by agents from the CIA and Saudi Arabian Intelligence Agency. He claims he was tortured. A few hours later, though, this video is released. A man who looks the same and also says he's Shahram Amiri claims he is here to further his education. The U.S. State Department seems to agree with that statement.
He is here of his own volition, and he has chosen to return to Iran of his own volition. That is how we do things here in the United States. We didn't seize him and bring him here, and we're not preventing him from returning to Iran.
Officials say Shahram Amiri spent the last day inside this building, the Pakistani embassy's office representing Iranian interests, since the old Iranian embassy in Washington sits empty because there's no longer a diplomatic relationship between the United States and Iran.
According to reports coming out of Iran, Shahram Amiri arrived here Monday night. He told those inside he was, quote, brought here by his captors and demanded an immediate return to Iran.
As media outlets waited outside for a glimpse of something, those at the State Department press briefing bickered about what this all means.
Now he says he wants to go back home. Why is Iran not the victor here?
The facts speak for themselves.
Proof here of chaos in a case of a man shrouded in mystery with potentially far-reaching implications for relations between the United States and Iran and an outcome that is still unknown. In Washington, Christine Frizzell, RT.
Well, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern says Washington probably wanted Shahram Amiri to confirm its claims that Tehran has nuclear weapon ambitions.
It seems to me that what the United States thought they needed here was someone from ostensibly inside Iran to talk about how far advanced Iran is on their nuclear weapons development program, which the real intelligence agencies say ceased. And maybe they persuaded him that that would be a good thing to do, and maybe he changed his mind when he thought about, you know, what will happen to his friends in Iran. So it was just kind of, you know, the CIA and FBI saying, oh, shucks, we blew that one. And it's another black mark added to a whole string of black marks on the professionalism of an intelligence service.
So that, of course, was ex-CIA Ray McGovern. Pretty, I believe, stand-up, trustworthy guy who's been on the inside, who knows what goes on, who knows what doesn't go on, who knows what goes on with the intelligence networks. So, again, as I said at the outset of this story, I have not wrapped my brain around it. But, like many of the stories that we go over on here, as we've already said, you start to see the ugly fingerprints of the intelligence networks. Now, we're going to have to step on the gas here if we're going to get through all of this news. And as you'll probably note, if you've been listening to the show recently, getting the spinning beach ball of doom more and more, as of course I try and do more and more here in the studio, and it's a one-man show. We want to hit some of the quick updates on this Shahram Amiri story. And let's, you know, start it off right with one from the Washington Post, which, of course, we already noted a little while ago with the Grahams connected to the Bilderbergs. U.S. paid Amiri $5 million for aid to the CIA. Iranian nuclear scientist welcomed home. More on that from the New York Times. The Pakistani embassy denied harboring Shahram Amiri in the first place. That's coming from Wired. As well from Danger Room, CIA made Amiri a YouTube star, of course referencing those videos we heard in that clip. And the name of that clip, linked up at the very bottom of this post, Secret Science, but science is spelled S-C-I-A-E-N-C-E. Abducted Iran nuke expert headed home. So, of course, as in many of these cases, whether that's the underpants bomber or supposed busted terror rings or any of these kind of situations, I'm sure we'll see a follow-up, and I'm sure that follow-up will contain even more fingerprints of the intelligence networks. But let's now move to our latest drug war updates. And we've got a few good and bad all together. With DEA raids and general guilt. With a few other headlines thrown in. Starting with a new article from legendary Peter Dale Scott. His new article, it's up on globalresearch.ca, Kyrgyzstan, U.S. and the global drug trade, deep forces, coup d'etat, narcotics, and terror. And we have noted time and time again, my friends, that drugs fund wars, fund Wall Street, and it's all connected by the old boys. So just as it was true during Vietnam, it's true now. Opium and heroin, of course, being the most highly sought after and profitable drug. Of course, all keeping the drug underworld criminal syndicate going. That, of course, then you'll get arrested for doing the drugs that they bring in. Again, they cause the problem, but they'll pose as your savior. We saw when Obama came in, we heard all this talk about he and Holder saying, oh, well, we're not really going to go after any of the low-level medical marijuana stuff. And ultimately, you're going to see that a lot of cities and towns aren't going to go after it because they don't have the money to go after something that ultimately is a personal choice. Marijuana's never killed anyone, unlike the alcohol industrial complex and the tobacco industrial complex. But we get this from NewsJunkiePost.com. DEA flouts medical marijuana ordinance by raiding the very first applicant. The federal DEA has flouted Mendocino County, California's newly enacted medical marijuana ordinance by raiding the first collective that applied to the sheriff's cultivation permit program. That's a nice little deal they got set up. That sounds like something we've reported out of China, where they give you a complaint number, and that's pretty much calling to make sure that a van's going to come pick you up. You know, so they can harvest your organs or whatever. A multi-agency federal task force descended on the property of Joy Greenfield, the first Mendo patient to pay the $1,050 application fee under the ordinance, which allows collectives to grow up to 99 plants provided they comply with certain regulations. Well, it looks like they were complying with all the certain regulations, and yet that didn't help. Meanwhile, we do have the vote coming up later this year in California to straight legalize marijuana. And we touch on all our drug war updates, and again, it's going to be something that's only grown, again, as we saw the Obamasiah come in. The medical marijuana drug war meme has kind of reared its head again, as we see that perhaps they're going to give us marijuana, but take everything else. We had a recent conference where they spoke a little truth and slammed the fraudulent, wasteful, failed drug war, and also denounced the prison industrial complex, which, as we already mentioned, is intimately connected. More on that from Alternet. And in here, it's, you know, not surprising. This is how it works. We've already briefly referenced this just in passing, but here it is now from the Associated Press. Italian military police general guilty of drug smuggling and organizing fake anti-drug operations. Now, when I first saw this headline, which I just kind of elucidated there for you and made it a little bit longer, the real headline basically just says, military police general guilty of drug smuggling. And when I first saw the headline, it kind of rang a little more true because I thought it said military police generally guilty of drug smuggling, as in general, the military is running the drug operations. Italian news reports say that a military police general was convicted of smuggling drugs during the course of an investigation and sentenced to 14 years in prison. The news agencies ANSA and APCOM said Giampaolo Ganzer, G-A-N-Z-E-R, was sentenced on Monday after being convicted of bringing heroin, that's what we said, into Italy in the course of two operations led by the Carabinieri, which is basically their investigative unit in Italy, with a link to Wikipedia to flesh that one out for you. They were bringing heroin into Italy during the course of two anti-drug operations led by the investigative unit that he headed in Milan. Prosecutors allege that a group of officials in the military police unit had organized a drug trafficking ring with the aim of getting rich. Ganzer was among 14 people convicted in the case, while four were acquitted. In addition to jail time, Ganzer was fined about $82,000. Our last note on the drug war, DEA raids, and general guilt is, again, we like to joke sometimes, we should play the game of see if you can figure out what story is from The Onion and what isn't. States move to stamp out synthetic pot known as K2.
K2, legal herbs with a kick, a surprise to most.
Really? Legal in North Carolina? Is it legal all over the United States?
Yes, legal. And police say it's dangerous.
It has a synthetic cannabinol in it that is the psychoactive ingredient that's in marijuana.
I set out to find some K2 at Asheville's Octopus Garden.
Do you sell K2?
We do.
Where the clerk offered several varieties starting at $25.
The pink and the summit are $32.95, and this one is $39.95.
I'll take the cheap one.
Yesterday, federal authorities raided the Lawrence, Kansas store owned by the man who makes it. It's reportedly produced by Bouncing Bears Botanicals, a company that says its herbal products are aromatic and even magical. But authorities have charged a man with manufacturing and distributing controlled substances such as mescaline and lysergic acetamide related to LSD.
They sell a wildfire. Amazing.
A hot seller at local smoke shops.
But it's perfectly legal.
Perfectly legal.
And a worrisome trend for police.
The big issue is right now it's unregulated.
Who fear the legal fake weed could have deadly consequences.
And there's all those other dangerous things that happen when people are under the influence, as well as the effects that it has on children when they start to use it.
It looks like they would take something like that off the market. I mean, especially if he's been arrested.
Especially. That, of course, was an actual real report on K2. Maybe I'll have to roll to my friendly local head shop and see, you got K2? Because why would you want to try fake, synthetic, genetically engineered plants when they pretty much grow naturally in the world? And you got to believe that whatever the creator God, Big Bang, whatever, think it was a mistake they left cannabis and marijuana here? Don't let me digress into all of that. We need now to get into our latest BioWars and EnviroHealth updates, toxic takeovers, and objective eugenics. And we do have a positive update. And I haven't, like I said, I was out of town, so I'm not exactly as up to date on these stories as I could or should be. However, even when I have it down to a science, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do more investigation yourself. But coming from WashingtonsBlog.com, due to public outcry, Coast Guard rescinds ban of reporters and photographers from the oil spill. Will we see real reporting now going down in the BP Homeland Security Blackwater-controlled Ground Zero of the Gulf oil spill, which again, as the days and weeks and months, today being, I think, the 88th day of this spill, which of course began on 420, as many things seem to. We glance back at Google News on this July 16th, 2010. Well test continues as flow of oil remains halted. Has it been halted? It's temporary, I believe. But let's go down the list of updates. BP oil spill corrects it. Dispersants suspected in widespread crop damage. And that's probably not the least of the damage we're going to see coming from the chemicals being put into the already toxic terror juice, which is already spilling all over. An amazing one from GregPalace.com. Shoot BP, the Amazon to Arctic investigation. And it's not coming up. Palace keeps moving that story around, but we basically note, and I don't know his name off the top of my head, but a native elder who basically said, if I had it to do over again, when those BP Exxon guys all came up to my land, I'd shoot them white sons of bitches. We also get to the BP rumor mill from the fantastic ZeroHedge.com. The Sunday Times has reported that Exxon and Chevron have maybe gotten the green light from Obamasiah to plot their takeover of British Petroleum. As we already noted at the top of the show, BP shares weaken, but new cap holds. We also note from Helium.com, BP readying super weapon to avert escalating Gulf nightmare. I add the question mark. I'm not sure. And again, we'll always know just because I link and post to things doesn't mean that I endorse it. I'm giving it for the full contextual overview of the stories. And so the last thing that we have posted up on the Gulf oil spill from Reuters, BP stops flow of oil into Gulf of Mexico. Our other EnviroHealth updates, we'll hop over for another one from Paul Joseph Watson, where depopulation fanatics and eugenicists launch objective global population study. The Royal Society, an organization made up of renowned eco-fascists and depop fanatics, is to launch a major study on human population growth and its implications for social and economic development, a study it has ludicrously branded as objective. The Society acknowledges it is delving into a hugely controversial area, but says a comprehensive and scientific review of the evidence is needed, reports the BBC, along with a picture of a huge crowd of people crammed together, which is actually a photo from like a rock show or something. The last time I think we seriously got into any population discussions, we played a 30-year-old clip from John and Yoko on the Mike Wallace Show, where somebody in the audience talked about the population bomb. And that was, of course, the talking point in the 70s. The population bomb, I believe, written by the Ehrlichs and Holdrens, who are now the science czars. Eco-science, that's their book. And again, it all sources back to eugenics. Do your research on eugenics and you'll see it connect to everything right now. Plutonium cleanup in Washington State could take millennia. More on that from allgov.com. Vatican radio waves blamed for high cancer risk. That's from The Telegraph. That's a whole episode probably in and of itself, my friends. If you recall, several weeks ago, we noted the new Lucifer telescope going up next to the Vatican telescope in Arizona. Vitamin and nutritional supplement maker NBTY agrees to be acquired by Carlyle Group in a $3.5 billion deal. I smell eugenics. I smell Codex Alimentarius. I smell the eugenics multi-generational serial killers connected in things like the Carlyle Group, buying up vitamin and nutritional supplement makers such as this NBTY. They're buying it all up. They can afford it. They've got the capital. They print the money. They push the buttons on the zeros and ones in this phony fiat currency of fractional reserve banking and derivatives and credit default swaps and all of the schemes and shenanigans that ultimately we just need a Robin Hood tax, a Wall Street sales tax, if you will, and to take our money out of the banks that are financing and profiting off of our destruction and throws a couple nickels as interest, and we're supposed to be happy for that. Our last note on EnviroHealth, like many of the stories and headlines sometimes, they could fit into a number of other subheadings, but here it is. Tesla to deliver prototype electric autos to Toyota this month. We could have tied that into some science or technology, perhaps even cyberspace war, perhaps even the economy connected to Toyota's difficulties. And doesn't it seem as though we could have had electric cars quite some time ago? If you read about the amazing things Tesla was doing a century ago, and we somehow still just somehow can only seem to use this terror juice to power everything we do. We just haven't figured out a way around that. We haven't figured out how to become energy dependent. But somehow, again, we trace back the connections of who owns and profits off of these destructive things. And they blame us for becoming addicted to it after they've forced it down our throat. Now, on all the levels, they're going to pull the rug out from under us and make us even more dependent upon the state. But quickly now, with just under a half hour to go, we're only now getting to the news purge. That doesn't bode well for us getting to the latest from cyberspace war and food world order, but I'm going to do my best here on episode 178. So here we go, 7:15 news purge, crash years. Our first 9/11 updates, NIST denies access to WTC-7 data. Surprise, surprise. That's from 911blogger.com. Classified CIA transcripts counter Osama terror role. And, of course, all the contradictory things surrounding Emmanuel Goldstein, who was, of course, funded and trained by the Central Intelligence Agency to fight the commies under the direction of folks like Robert Gates and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who are still around to this day. NASA flight director confirms 9/11 aircraft speed as the elephant in the room of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. More on that from pilotsfor911truth.org. And speaking of engineered crashes, let's get our latest EconoCrash updates. A great new article from Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, which of course ties into his new documentary, The Power of the Purse, Engineered Depression to Bring in One World Currency. And again, it's all happening according to plan. Tarpley.net has Trichet and his fake stress test taking the European banking system to the edge of abyss. Obama's Summer of Misery and Hardship tour hits the road, shoving austerity down your throat that somehow we just can't pay for all these things. But meanwhile, the war of terror goes on worldwide, but somehow we don't have jobs. Oh, that's right, we ship them all overseas. To that most favored nation, China, the model nation for what will be forced upon the states. As we talked about, the engineered collapse of America being brought down to third world level, as perhaps has been planned all along from the very beginning, that wealthy landowning males set all this up. No blacks, no women. That, you know, we had to add that later. We are being turned into, quite literally, the Great Satan, and that's going to be the thing that the global government community is just going to have to come in and take care of us. And there's your home front, and there's your shattered union, as we've already referenced. Shady character Grover Norquist and his Americans for Tax Reform does correctly note that there are 6 months until the largest tax hikes in U.S. history. More on that from .connectoruk.blogspot.com. The gap between the very rich and everybody else, all the other ugly Americans, is now the greatest since 1928. Huh, 1928. I wonder what happened the next year. J.P. Morgan profit leaps nearly 80%. J.P. Morgan, of course, financing most of the destructive mountaintop removal going on in my home state of West Virginia. More and more Americans preparing for social collapse. That's on Raw Story. And again, the survivalism meme, the preppers, call it what you will, massive amounts of people. Banks taking homes at record pace. Hundreds of federal agents with Homeland Security, FBI, ICE, They all got Ponzi schemed. More on that amazing story from AOLnews.com, and we'll close out our Econo Crash updates with what is turning into a weekly point. But now that he's got his own website, Tarpley.net, up and is a frequent contributor to Russia Today, let's get the latest on Obama, the Wall Street puppet.
Now, the one person who has, I think, seen through all this is Senator Feingold, the last honest man in the Senate, I guess, at this point. He says his litmus test is, will this stop the next crash? Will it stop the next meltdown? The answer is no, it will do nothing. There's nothing against derivatives, hedge funds, speculation.
So is this a political move, then, for the Senate, for especially the Democratic Senate, President Obama, given it's an election year? Are they trying to get this forward to say the Main Street, look, we're trying to regulate Wall Street, we actually have our house in line? What's going on here?
It's a cynical, demagogic stunt by Obama and Harry Reid and the rest of these people and Pelosi and so forth to say, oh, we're really tough on Wall Street. We took them on. Whereas this bill was written completely by Wall Street lobbyists. I would point against Feingold. This is a guy who voted against the Graham-Leach-Bliley of 1999. Before that, there was the Interstate Banking Act of 1994. It used to be you could only have banks in one state. That's how we get too big to fail. He voted against repealing that, too. So all of the New Deal protections have been systematically stripped away. And the result is the panic that we've had. So Obama, I guess, is proving this once again, my thesis, which is that he's a Wall Street puppet and these Democrats in Congress are nothing different.
Now, you're calling this a cynical joke on behalf of the American people, of course, who are suffering because of this recession and the economic downturn. What is it that needs to happen in the United States at this point as far as the banking system goes? Does it need complete restructuring? And, I mean, you're mentioning that this bill is not going to help, so what will?
Well, remember, the crisis of 2008 happened when banks and hedge funds speculated with derivatives, collateralized debt obligations, and credit default swaps did the most damage. So, if that's the case, ban hedge funds, you regulate them, they're not hedge funds anymore, ban collateralized debt obligations, ban credit default swaps, impose a 1% Tobin tax, a Wall Street sales tax, on this huge turnover, right, high-frequency trading and so forth going on, and, indeed, restore the Glass-Steagall firewall so that a commercial bank with insured deposits is one thing, and a stock-jobbing investment bank brokerage is completely separate. But of course, you've also then got to realize that the whole banking system is already bankrupt. It's not like we're heading off bankruptcy. We've already got it. So you'd have to use these laws to get rid of the derivatives. You've got about 1.5 quadrillion of derivatives, probably two-thirds of that here in the United States. There's got to be measures to essentially delete this stuff, to shred it, in effect, right?
And
to abrogate them.
Very, very briefly, Webster, who benefits from this financial reform bill?
Well, the people who paid Obama, Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase, Pandit of Citibank, Mack of Morgan Stanley. Those are the people who control the Democratic Party through their contributions. And all this stuff about getting tough with Wall Street, all the sort of populist demagogy is just a smokescreen for the biggest sellout that we've ever seen.
I definitely think Senator Feingold's words should be put into consideration. Who will this stop the next financial collapse? That was Webster Tarpley, author and investigative journalist.
And this massive heist only beat the most massive record-breaking heist right before it, as we see each time, like junkies, needing more and more, a bigger hit each time. My friends, we could do, and probably should do, entire more episodes on what's going on in this engineered collapse, this controlled demolition of our economy that we can source back to the Federal Reserve and the bankster practices of the last 100-plus years. But let's get into geopolitics, where we have the aging Fidel Castro warning nuclear war, quote, breaking out very soon. More on that from News Junkie Post. He is, of course, referring to the volatile situation, where it's always volatile by design in the Middle East. The warships, the fear-mongering, the threat-aganda, the ratcheting up, beating the drums for war against Iran, which is not like Iraq, which is not like Afghanistan. They have not been subject to crippling sanctions for decades. They haven't been bombed into oblivion by depleted uranium. They will be able to fight back. Their connections to Russia and China through the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is going to make this a very ugly situation. This is what ties in with this Amiri story that just ties in with the beating of the drums for this war that this crumbling empire suicidally wants. As again, we're tied to the nation of Israel in this Armageddon death pact. U.S. conservatives form a new pro-Israel lobby group because, you know, they don't really have enough people looking out for their interests, you know, AIPAC. More on that from Haaretz, and that, again, sources back to our reactionary Congress critters. An interesting but long one, but worth it, from, again, my man Jeff Long of RockCreekFreePress.com and RedactedNews.blogspot.com. For propaganda to work, it must first be believable. This story goes into the captured Palestinian missile-launching garbage truck. And in this era of Photoshop, you should be able to take a look and say, one, well, I don't really think that's Photoshopped, and two, do a little research and learn that they're not missile launchers. They're built into the truck for other reasons that, again, we can't get into, but it segues quite nicely into our next story that does come from NationalTerrorAlert.com, and we can put this along with the story we referenced a couple weeks ago where the Taliban was supposedly putting HIV-infected needles into bombs. And as we, again, note, for propaganda to work, it must first be believable. Taliban jihad terror monkeys, probably not real. That's the headline from NationalTerrorAlert.com, as if you need to be told that this video and this story was even partly believable. And again, we'll reference what's real, what's satire. The line becomes increasingly blurred. And again, I think that's why the work of independent alternative media becomes all the more important to debunk a lot of these stories the moment they hit the meme sphere. But we'll close off our geopolitics with a quick note from CNN's Rick Sanchez, where he notes that the recent terror bombings are helpful.
I want to tell you a story now. Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Rick's List. This is a story about a guy named Nate Henn. This is important. Stay with me here. By all accounts, American Nate Henn was a hell of a guy. This is a selfless individual who devoted his young life to helping others. Today, he's dead. Nate Henn is dead. Killed by murderous terrorists in the faraway land of Uganda, where Henn was working with children. Thousands of people had gathered in Uganda's capital to watch the final game of the World Cup. They're watching a soccer game. The game was in its 19th minute when the bombs began to explode. One at a restaurant, then two at a rugby field where they were watching on an outdoor screen. Our latest tally of the number who died, 74. 74 innocent people are dead. Joining me now is Gary Bernstein. He's a former CIA officer. But you know what's interesting about this? In a strange way, the event is helpful to the cause of those of us who know how sadistic these fundamental radical Islamic terrorists are. And if it helps get the message out there that these are not the good guys, then so be it.
I like how his voice cracks there. How they are. As we've noted time and time again, we see the criminal syndicate calling for helpful terror attacks. Whenever they're talking about whatever agenda is trying to be pushed by whatever puppet administration, as the wheels start to fall off, and of course there's no public support for their austerity or draconian measures, what do you see? You see the insiders saying, well, we'd sure like to do all these things, but we would have to have a 9/11 or an Oklahoma City to make that happen. So we're going to see that in just a moment. As we jump to our history mystery updates, declassified documents show 60s-era senators believed they were misled on the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Gulf of Tonkin incident, of course, helped kickstart into high gear the Vietnam War where 50-plus thousand Americans lost their lives for a war of aggression based on lies, just as they all are. And that was the catalyzing catastrophic event. That was the false flag kickoff event. That was the Reichstag fire. That was the 9/11 event. That was the sinking of the Maine. That was the event that kickstarted it. And I think it says a lot when you Google or search out Gulf of Tonkin or do research on it. It's always referred to as the Gulf of Tonkin incident or affair. Our other history mystery notes, Robert Groden is suing Dallas over his recent arrest. There's a story from WFAA.com. JFK conspiracy theorist sues Dallas over arrest of basically him selling his books and things in Dealey Plaza. Another story that we got to on the latest episode of The New World Next Week from the Daily Mail, why I'm certain my friend Dr. Kelly was murdered. Dr. Kelly, of course, exposing the lies leading up to the illegal war of aggression based on lies in Iraq. Part two, the sexing up of the intelligence. He said he'd probably be found dead in a field, and he was. And he was most certainly murdered. Six police officers charged in Danziger Bridge shooting after Katrina. More on that from the LA Times. And one interesting art note, a recent restoration of a Da Vinci painting called Virgin on the Rocks reveals hidden details. Our new News Purge subheading, Holy Hexes, to fill in all the rising stories of occult sinister forces in the New Age religion world. This from New York Daily News. Governor Patterson turns to higher power by wearing red string Kabbalah bracelet to ward off evil. That's their headline. But quickly down the list, murder and mayhem. Again, this could go under BioWars EnviroHealth because it happened at a Houston oil executive's home. It could happen under police state as we see these catalyzing catastrophic events somehow being engineered on schedule with this homegrown errorism. From Raw Story, package bomb goes off at Houston oil executive's home.
Residents in a northwest Houston neighborhood are scared after a bomb was sent to a woman at her home and it exploded. Residents say the explosive was disguised as a box of chocolates. Hello again, everyone. I'm Tom Abrams. The Daily Uchida is off tonight. And we told you about the attack last night on Eyewitness News at 10, and it still has so many people afraid. Investigators say the woman received the package at her home off Seamus a couple of weeks ago, but didn't open it until last night. And that is when it exploded. Eyewitness News reporter Sonia Azad is live at the medical center with the latest developments this evening. Sonia?
Yeah, Tom, police are still not releasing this woman's name. I can tell you, however, she is in her 60s. A family member told me she had surgery here today, but she is stable. Meantime, her neighbors, who are understandably shaken, are praying for her recovery.
And just heard a really, really loud boom.
Courtney Turpin lives two doors down from where the pipe bomb exploded in her neighbor's hands.
It sounded like it was just outside of our walls.
Around 6:30 last night, a woman in her 60s who lives at this northwest Houston home opened the package she'd received weeks ago. The lady's friends say her face was instantly pelted with nails and tacks. Shrapnel blew so high it landed on her rooftop.
Our neighbor came out and had some blood on her, and she was walking out with her husband.
Neighbors who saw the package but didn't want to appear on camera describe it as a box of chocolates left inside a gift bag. One neighbor says there was a card attached that simply said, "Thank you." It included the woman's name but was misspelled.
And I can't believe that anybody would do anything as terrible and tragic to a person like this lady.
Neighbors say the woman often performed random acts of kindness for her neighbors. Perhaps one reason she thought the box of chocolates was a thank you in return. Now, as everyone waits to hear who did this and why, skepticism blossoms in a neighborhood where it once never existed.
We've already, you know, instructed our children, you know, don't open anything that, you know, until we're home, and if it doesn't look like it's something normal, you know, just put it to the side.
Before, I would have never thought anything about it.
And now?
Now I think we'll be a little bit more cautious.
Now, sources say the power of this blast entirely destroyed the couple's outdoor patio furniture. They say this was no kids' bomb. It apparently included batteries and wires, and they say it was quite professional-looking, those people who saw it. Because this is considered an attempted murder, HPD homicide detectives are investigating, along with ATF. We are live in the medical center tonight. Sonia Azad, 13, Eyewitness News.
As we get into the final 10 minutes of this episode 178, quickly, we're just going to be able to finish up the news purge and not get into foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com. We got to get to now the latest Obamasiya updates, where we hop to another one from Paul Joseph Watson, where, as we've already noted, top Clinton official says only a terror attack can save Obama. Former senior advisor to President Bill Clinton says the only thing which can rescue Barack Obama's increasingly tenuous grip on power as his approval figures continue to plunge is a terror attack on the scale of Oklahoma City or 9/11, another startling reminder that such events only ever serve to benefit those in authority. Buried in a Financial Times article, Financial Times, of course, being one of the main mouthpieces to the elites and movers and shakers, buried in an FT article about Obama's quote-unquote growing credibility crisis and fears on behalf of Democrats that they could lose not only the White House but also the Senate to Republicans, Robert Shapiro makes it clear that Obama is relying on an October surprise in the form of a terror attack to rescue his presidency. Quote, the bottom line here is that Americans don't believe in President Obama's leadership. He has to find some way between now and November of demonstrating that he is a leader who can command confidence, and short of a 9/11 event or an Oklahoma City bombing, I can't think of how he could do that. End quote. That article is linked up for you. Financial Times doesn't like to give their full articles, but as we always reference, save your articles. Every article linked up on MediaMonarchy.com I have saved as a PDF. I recommend you do the same with your media outlets, because again, it can go down the memory hole in a second. We also note that Bilderberg-connected corporate media mogul Mort Zuckerman admitted that he writes Obama's speech for him.
Well, I voted for Obama. I, in fact, helped write one of his speeches. We endorsed Obama.
Which speech?
I'd rather not go into that for the moment. But
you get a lot of applause.
Not from the people I hope.
So there he notes. He doesn't want to get into which speech he wrote for Obamasiya. Not getting into all those other connections of who writes what and who came from where, but we also note from allgov.com, and this sources back, I believe, to something on Huffington Post, where they note that Obama is more like Reagan than FDR. And they note, I believe, his talk about being against big government, his talk about this supposed mythical free market that exists, and the massive increase in military spending. Explain that one away, Obamasiya. Governors voice grave concerns on immigration. This story from the New York Times features quite prominently the aforementioned soon-to-be former governor of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, because he's one of the heads of this governor's association, as again, the immigration meme, which of course is just being used for the greater scheme, and of course to get us all to tear each other apart. We have posted up from the Wall Street Journal, West Virginia governor expects to fill Byrd's seat by Sunday, as we noted at the top of the show, and it was even news to me. He's now appointed a guy named Goodwin, I believe. So, more on that from the moves going on in my home state of West Virginia. We have... I skipped it. And there is a video report from the Associated Press. Little Obama movie opens in Indonesia. And again, we're not going to get into all of that. Ex-Clinton fundraiser, speaking of the Clintons, Hassan Namazi gets 12 years in prison. And all the other criminal cabinets and apostles of war connected to the current Obamasiya Wall Street puppet and the previous Wall Street military industrial CFR skull and bones connected puppet. Cheney, Darth Cheney, had a heart device implanted. More on that from Raw Story. And Napolitano, not Homeland Security, but the legal analyst over on Faux News, correctly noted that Bush should have been indicted. And now we get to our Oregon oddities. This coming from KGW.com. Zombies crash on I-84 in Portland, where the sheriff noted that everyone is alive despite being undead. There were folks on their way to a zombie costume party. They were in a car crash. So, of course, it confused the hell out of the first responders and people who saw. 87-year-old Oregon woman killed after taser. Turns out she only had a pellet gun. And she had heart trouble, so of course she died instantly with the new, you know, less than lethal tasers that our police now use at the drop of a hat. When they used to just maybe subdue you, now they tase you, and instead of tasing you, they'll just shoot you. Our last Oregon note, Portland Mayor Sam Adams pledges ban on plastic grocery bags again. Ban everything. Do I support plastic bags? No. Do I need a law outlawing it? I don't think so. Be the change you want to see in the world. Every law just makes a new criminal. Again, that's whole other episodes unto themselves. Lastly, the War Horrors notes on this 7/15 news purge for the crash years. Requiem for the anti-war movement. This from Cindy Sheehan's soapbox. Remember anti-war? We used to have that in the fake left-right paradigm, but now we don't. Did we hit the story last week? I don't recall. It's all a swirl. From WeLoveCostaRica.com, 46 U.S. warships plus 7,000 U.S. Marines en route to Costa Rica? IDF officer indicted on charges of sexually harassing thousands of teenage girls. More on that from Haaretz. Google glitch sends Marines calls to a Washington man, getting calls for the Marines on his phone. And lastly, from CTBTO.org, 2,053 nuclear explosions conducted from 1945 to 1998. That is a sort of video art installation dissertation from, I believe, a Japanese scientist and artist. And that's what we're living in. So quickly now, as I said, you're going to have to go to foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com for the latest updates there on our tracked and traced and databased asses on the Chinese airport that closed after a fiery UFO was spotted over the city. But of course, state media said, well, it was actually a military intelligence connected situation with the states, and we don't really want to talk about it. 46,000 dairy farms closed in the last decade. We also cover that on The New World next week. Using local organic co-ops to defeat globalists. That's on foodworldorder.com. We also, of course, have the latest from groundzeromedia.org. Systemic failure, a heartbeat away. We have the latest from corbettreport.com. Signs, symbols, and sigils. Fantastic episode. Great interview with Freeman Fly getting into the occult significance of our sacred corporate symbolism. The aforementioned latest New World Next Week episode, as I said, we do have it up now on blip.tv, newworldnextweek.blip.tv. You can get the high quality episodes there. We're still tweaking it, still working it out, but it's all in an effort to just make more redundant and spread this information. Quickly now, we'll reference the creepy customers coming to Media Monarchy in the past week. Paramount Pictures out of Los Angeles, California. They're reading the last year's story about Marines embedded at Los Angeles coroner's office. We had the headquarters of the USAISC out of Fort Riley, Kansas, the Department of Homeland Security out of Silver Spring, Maryland. They were reading about Abraham Bolden, the ex-Secret Service agent, revealing the JFK assassination plot that was in Chicago, pre-Dallas. And lastly, the Michigan Legislative Council out of Lansing, Michigan, marijuana bus where the money is for the police. My friends, that's it. Episode 178, July 16th, 2010, MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you, as always, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org. the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com. Plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.